I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Mully and Haw, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, and we are delighted to welcome in Merrill Hodge, former Bears player, and Dr. Peter Cummings, and the two of them have worked together to create this book, Brainwashed, The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. Merrill, good morning. How are you, Dr. Cummings? Good morning.
Welcome.
How are you doing?
Good to see you guys. Both of you. It's been, been a few years.
Yeah, it sure has. I covered you when you played, of course, here in Chicago.
I just wish it would have been a lot longer.
Yeah, how about it? It was quick, wasn't it?
I don't know if people here in Chicago probably do not know these stories, but as a kid, my favorite team was the Pittsburgh Steelers, but my favorite player, which when I say this, millions of people will say he was mine too, was Walter Payton.
Yes.
I mean, that was my idol. So the Bears, I have a Chicago Bear lamp that I still have sitting in my office that I used to wake up to every morning as a kid that I still have. I mean, I love this city. I love the Chicago Bears. Walter Payton, there's not a better, not just a better football player, but a better man. I mean, to lose him, I mean, I talk
about
him often.
1994, yeah. What do you remember?
I signed a three-year deal here. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you this, I rolled into this city, and I'm telling you, I felt like I was about to turn 30, and I felt like I was 10 years old. Honestly, I felt like a kid who gets ready for Christmas when I rolled into this city. It was like a dream come true. That's why I said I wish it would have been so much longer.
And coming from Pittsburgh, so you got to play with the team you loved as a child, and then obviously your idol.
My two favorite teams. And people used to say, well, you can't have two teams. I go, yes, I can. One's in the AFC, and one's in the NFC.
God, Walter was unbelievable, too. I remember – you know, just it being in the locker room and someone came up behind me and pinched me in the posterior, like really hard, like not like playfully. And I reel around and there's the Hall of Famer. Like, what are you supposed to do? You know, damn you
Accept
and
it.
Your place on the board. Yeah, you just have to laugh along with them, you know.
But he was fun.
He was unbelievable. He was always around. He'd run upstairs and answer the phones. People would call the building and be Walter answering the phone.
I don't know if people know. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people know that about him. He was just a character.
Oh, he was great.
There's a lot of layers to Walter Payton. I tell people this all the time, aside of being a great football player. The only great experience actually of playing here is that Fred Cato was the same trainer, athletic trainer for Walter Payton.
That's right.
When I got here. Every day before I went to practice, and I'd have Fred tape me, and I always had Fred tell me a story, something about Walter Payton, you know, that I didn't know. And I found so many fascinating things about him. He sat on the Chicago Bears board, so he would come to practice at times.
That's right.
And so he would come out to practice, and we started, you know, I got to visit with him. I got to know him better. In fact, Riddell had a helmet they wanted me to wear, and I didn't want to wear it, so I had him sign that helmet. Well, once Walter Payton signed it, I'm like, well, I can't wear that helmet.
Right. So I find it fascinating that you've written this book, Merrill, because as I said before, I was at your final news conference. You sat outside at the old Hallis Hall, and there was a little bench there, and you talked to all of us, and then afterward we talked to you, and it was chilling because you had a lot of concussions in a short period of time. Was it
two in a very short period
of time?
Yeah, two in about 5 week, 6 week period.
And I don't know if you even recall this because we were talking afterward and you said that you didn't know what you had just said at that news conference,
right.
That you couldn't recall. Right. You said – you answered a question and you said, I don't even know what the last question was. That you could – you were kind of – you were living the movie Memento, if you will. You had this short-term memory. It's just it was completely gone for you.
Right.
And I was honestly worried for you. I thought, oh, my God. And like a lot of people at the time, I thought, boy, this is a horrible game. Because I remember talking to Al Toon and talking to some other people that had to retire for the same reason, writing a story about it. And I was concerned for you. And then, of course, saw your great work on television and you're breaking down film and everything. But how long did that take for you to come back from that?
18 months. In fact, in the book, I talk about it. I'm on the Kennedy. I'm actually in Chicago. And they told me let's go back to that moment and create some clarity first. What happened, and that's 1994, what yep. the problem was at that time was improper care for that injury. We were not caring for that injury. We were allowing players to return to play, rather we had protocols or not. And I came from Pittsburgh where we had already established a baseline, a cognitive baseline, and we had a neurologist on staff in Joe Maroon. When I got to Chicago, they didn't have a neurologist on staff. Right. They had no baseline. So they didn't have extra tools to evaluate me before they returned me to play. In fact, I got cleared over the phone. So it's about protocols.
You got cleared over the phone.
Over the phone. And listen, I took that doctor to court, and it's well publicized, and people will bring that up, and they're like, well, I can't
you won
believe
that lawsuit. Right
to it. And I won the lawsuit. Yeah. And people will go, why would you be writing a book about this if you did that? It's two separate things here, okay? And let's be factual and let's be honest. Okay, that was what was going on in 1994, and my passion was to change that in the environment of the National Football League. To the Chicago Bears' credit, which this is not talked about, which needs to be talked about, in 1995, what do? They become the first one of the first teams along with the Philadelphia Eagles to make cognitive testing mandatory for all their players. So they implemented a change to make the environment better. So they deserve that credit. But protocols and treatments are one category. Okay, that needs to get better. It has gotten better. What we do today for head trauma in all sports, okay, makes it better and safer than we've ever had in the history of sports. Now, the CTE subject.
Yes.
That is a scientific category that belongs separate of the protocols, treatments, and therapies. I wanted to know. I come from a concerned parent perspective on this. I wanted to know what this was. That guy to my left will talk a little more about it. But I went from neuropathologists across this country into Canada, and I asked them, okay, listen, tell me what this is. I've seen the headlines. I've read the papers. I'm no different other than I have a lot of experience in this, and I have resources so I can find out what the truth is. Because I got parents running around with their hair on fire, scared to death. But something doesn't make sense here. What is it? And this is exactly what they would tell me. Merrill, it's a pattern, okay, in an observation state. We do not know what causes it. And we don't know what it causes. We have people who have the CT pattern, never played sports, never played football. We have it in a one-year-old and a four-month-old. And I'm like, no, time out here. This pattern exists in somebody who doesn't play sports. And you haven't even looked at any other, the female gender is not even part of the equation. So you excluded half of the population you haven't even considered looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But the cases that were outside of sports alarm me. I'm like, wait a minute. We only hear about the football ones or the sports related ones. How can this be? Merrill, that's exactly why we're in an observation state. The science community is screaming, hold on. We don't know what causes it. It's a tau. Yes, it exists, but we don't know what causes it. It could be alcohol, obesity, sugar, drugs, opioids, inactivity, all of those things, which are life styles, whether you're doing them or not, that you can control. Age can be a factor. A genetics can be, if you have dementia in your family, there could be a genetic component.
Here's the obvious counter to it. So in 2016, Jeff Miller from the National Football League acknowledged the fact that he was asked a question in a congressional hearing, I believe. He said, is there a link between football and CTE? And said the answer to that question is yes. Yeah. And then Ann McKee from the Boston University CTE Center, 110 out of 111 brains of former NFL players were found to have CTE. The numbers, the science supports that. And look, I'm
no,
a football.
No, it doesn't. Actually, grotesquely irresponsible. And I'll let Dr. Cummings
finish the one.
The
numbers are irresponsible?
Grotesquely irresponsible to say this. There is no scientific fact. In fact, I'm going to challenge you and anybody that's listening to this right now. This is what I want you to do. You're like, you can argue I'm wrong. You find the scientific literature that uses that word right there linked. Why Jeff Miller used that word, I will never know. You can't find any scientific literature.
That's your objective.
Well, okay. You can't determine CTE until someone passes, right?
Right.
There's no way of figuring that out early.
But this is about science, okay? Mm-hmm. Not the media and not the headline. There's no scientific. I started doing that. I said, hey, listen, I went to all the neuropathologists and said, whoa, they said there's a link and it causes. They would pull out literature after literature. The guy to my left, he would show me all the literature. We'll talk about the 110 out of 111. All of the massive flaws, the scientific, that actually the stuff that isn't even scientific in that paperwork, when he explains it to you, You can't find that in the scientific literature. There is absolutely nothing. In fact, Boston University, they're like backstroking like Michael Phelps going, no. Concussions don't cause CT. However, they're the ones that drove that narrative. Okay. Then they use the word subconcussion. Well, that's not even scientific yet. Find the literature where they have actually.
Subconcussive hits.
That isn't even scientific. Okay. They have not even done the proper steps or procedures in science to make that science.
And you're scientific. Talking to somebody. Look, I played college football. My son plays college hockey. I love football. I am a football guy. Mm-hmm. But I think that there are two sides of this, and they both seem very extreme to me. One is that what you're describing is, okay, I'm not saying outlaw football. I think you have to be cognizant of its dangers and its inherent risks. I also don't think you can ignore the science as I think maybe – or not ignore, neglect the science.
Okay.
So I think there's a middle ground here that I think that we may be – ignoring.
Well, okay, I love that, but I'm going to let Dr. Cummings jump in here. You're right. We need to acknowledge the science. So let me ask you this, and then I'm not trying to put you on the spot. How many scientific papers have you read?
Well, that's a good question.
Okay, but it's okay to say quantify, you didn't.
No,
it's
okay. I've not read the
Meryl,
entire
I saw
paper.
The movie Concussion. Okay. Yeah. I feel like I'm an expert on all
of it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no.
This is going to get ugly.
Don't even start on that Hollywood disaster, because that is like – Hollywood did it, and they got to have a villain and a hero.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to take a moment. We'll come back, and Dr. Cummings will take over a little bit teach us some of the science of this.
You'll love this.
And I got to ask you about Mike Webster as well, because I had an experience with him that was pretty alarming. But I don't know if that's related to any of this. And I remember going to a thing at O'Hare conference with those doctors from Pittsburgh who were in that movie, and they believed it was at the time. So who knows? We'll get to Dr. Cummings. We'll talk more about this subject. We had a lot of people who are checking in on it. Really a fascinating subject. Yeah. And thank you, Meryl, for coming in. And Dr. Peter Cummings as well. We'll be right back here on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. We are fortunate to have both Meryl Hodge and Dr. Peter Cummings here. The name of the book is Brainwashed, The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. And we talk about the science. Dr. Cummings, you're here for the science. So there is no – I mean, there has to be a link, right? Because we've read it everywhere and we've heard there is a link. Do we know that there is no link between CTE and football? Is this a plot?
Well, there's no scientific literature that supports a direct link between head trauma and CTE. And what we would call it is an association. And it would be like, hey, don't you hate it when you're flying and they put the seatbelt light on, all of a sudden it gets bumpy? Maybe if they just kept the seatbelt light off, the flight would be really smooth, right? Association is not causation. And that's where we are. When you start looking at the wider body of literature in this area, you'll find CTE in people who've never played contact sports, never had head trauma. One of the biggest brain banks in the world over in England did a study and found the same rates of CTE in a control population as a neurodegenerative disease population. And 65-70% of those people never played a contact sport or had head injury. There's another study that you found it in a four-month-old, a one-year-old. So there's a lot we don't know about this.
You referred to it as hysteria that's broken out over this. Is that a fair comment? I mean, do you understand, though, the concerns that parents have over subjecting their children to a sport that they deem very dangerous to them?
Absolutely. I because this book was born from that hysteria, and I will admit to being one of those parents. I didn't want my son playing football. I banned it from. I'm a neuropathologist. I mean, this is my field. I didn't want him playing football because, admittedly, I was educated by the media. And one day he comes home, and even though I didn't make a big deal of it, we just didn't watch it. He comes home from a friend's house, and they were playing at Madden or some video game, and he busts in the door, leaves the door open, comes running up to me, and he says, "Dad, have you ever heard of this thing called football?" And I was like, "Oh, what am I gonna do?" And he's a young kid. I think it's gonna be a fad. I'll entertain it for a little while. It'll go away, and it became a huge part of his life. And I couldn't imagine my son without football. I couldn't imagine how empty his life would be. And that caused me to go look at this science. And I found things that what we're reading in the media is completely disconnected from what we have in the science. Then I took another step. I got really proactive, and I got a hold of people at USA Football. I got a hold of people at Pop Warner. I found out what the sport was doing to change. Because even if there is a slight chance of something happening, what is the sport doing to mitigate that risk? And I was blown away by how much the sport has changed since I played it as a kid. I took all the coaching certificate courses. I'm certified to coach flag, youth tackle. I coach flag. I coach tackle. And getting that proactive and involved in it was very comforting to me and my decision to allow my son to play football under the right adult supervision.
You know, as a sports writer, when Mike Webster was going into the Hall of Fame, I would have to write stories on all these guys, which was always a joy because they were eager to talk to you and to have a great time tracking down their life story, whatever. So I called Joe Horrigan from the Hall of Fame and I'm getting numbers for the guys going in that year. And he gives me a number for a bar in Pittsburgh where apparently Mike Webster lived in his car outside this bar and would come in and sweep the floors. Now, he's a featured person in the movie, and he was a former roommate of yours, Merrill. Yeah. So how do we not know that football did this to him? How do we not know that he wasn't anesthetizing himself, be it with drugs or with whatever, living basically to have a drink?
Well, unfortunately, you don't know that based on the movie, but Mike Webster died of heart failure, heart issue, okay? Nobody has ever died of CTE, ever. It has never caused a death. There's no there ever. That movie led you to believe that was the case. Mike Webster was addicted to Ritalin. Mike Webster had a lot of, you know, mental issues on both sides of the family. None of that was discussed in the movie or shared. In fact, I don't think the movie, they even really explained his cause of death. They act like it was football and his head when really it was his heart. He had a stent put in his heart. He had heart issues for years. And actually, the things that I have learned, the truth about really the science, the mental issues Mike Webster was going through, the problems he was having, I could have actually been a better teammate to Mike Webster. I could have done a better job of reaching out to Mike and helping him. And that's one of the problems and something we've done in the book too, is we've explained the science, but also we're trying to create a bridge here to help people who do have some mental health issues, mm-hmm. okay, or have post-concussion symptoms. Those are real, okay, but there are treatments and therapies for them. They are not going to be CTE. That connection and blending that together is irresponsible because there is no such scientific evidence of that. Instead of creating a bridge to help people, get them help where there is help, we have failed to do that. We are blaming things that you have no scientific evidence and no reason and no backing to blame. And we're making excuses versus getting help to people. And that's what we want to do, is open up a bridge so they can talk about it and get them the help that we do have available.
So Dr. Cummings, coming back to you, because we in the media are trained to believe and give credibility to people in the medical profession, the experts, mm-hmm. the doctors, Dr. Ann McKee, the CTE Institute, the 110 out of 111 brains that from former NFL players. How do you explain that? That is not something that you think is a valid number. I mean, is there a problem with that science? That's the message that we're getting from you, it seems.
Yeah, definitely. And there's two things to unpack with what you just said. You really only get information on this in the media from one source. But there is a overwhelming majority of people in my field jumping up and down going, hey, wait a second. This is not the case. And it took me 2 years of pushing a rock up the hill to be here with you guys today. And there are a plethora of other scientists out here who would be willing to sit down and have these conversations, saying the exact same things that I'm saying. So when you are reading things in the media and you look, you're only getting it from one source, you have to question that. It's not the job of a journalist to say, person A says it's sunny out, person B says it's rainy out. That's the story. The job of the journalist is to look out the window and say, oh, it's raining. And there's a whole area of science being ignored by the media on this. And that was part of the point of the book. So if you look at that 110 out of 111 paper, you know, it's interesting because you have 199%.
But you see the way the game has changed from an observation. I mean, and it's not hard. It's not a big leap to see the game as violent as ever and then to see that evidence and think, okay, and connect the two. That's the link that I think you're objecting to. Right. So I think it's easy.
Very easy. I did it. And I'm a fairly educated person, I think, especially in this field, right? I mean, I did it. And when parents come say, well, there's a 99% chance my son's going to, or daughter, as a lot of girls playing football now, is going to have CTE. Well, no, that's not at all what that paper says. What it's saying is that in a very select group of people who had a neurodegenerative symptomology, donated their brains, and they found a disease in that brain. It doesn't mean anything. It's like walking into an Alzheimer's brain bank where you know you have a bank of Alzheimer's brains. You know that's the clinical diagnosis. And then you test them for Alzheimer's disease and 99% of them have Alzheimer's. No kidding. So what does that tell you about your risk of Alzheimer's? Nothing. What does that tell you about the cause of Alzheimer's? Nothing. So it's an observational study. It's one of the lowest rungs on the hierarchy of clinical evidence that we can base medical decisions on. So it's not quite what.
Let me add a little bit to that, because people wanted, you know, I wanted to understand the science. So I started reading the science papers. She wrote in that science paper, and it says in there, caution, these words are in there, caution, you can't use this study to give any sense or degree of disease. Okay, it said that. She wrote that in there. When she's asked in the media about that study that she wrote, she says, oh, I got to believe at some level all football players have this. There cannot be a more grotesque abuse of the Hippocratic Oath to do just that. Her own words that she wrote in the science paper say, caution, this study, because of all of its major flaws and inconsistencies, you can't use that. Don't give that to the public, because you don't have a right to do that. Then you do it deliberately. So I do agree with you. You trust that doctor. You know what? So you use her words, and I don't blame you. However, from a journalist perspective, and this happened to me many times on this tour, did you go read the science paper? Did you go back it up and say, hey, you know what? Is that really what that science paper said? Or is she exaggerating it and fabricating it because she's trying to sell something?
I didn't read the science paper. I'm looking forward to reading the book. I haven't read your book yet. But, you know, I was like an English major. I understand how to process things. We were taught to do that. You got, as my understand it, your brain kind of floats around in your head. It's not locked into a spot. You get hit, you can bruise your brain. I'm just saying,
correct.
That's not true.
No, let me tell you this.
Your brain, you playing football, giving you a concussion isn't true.
Here's what's
more
beautiful.
Girls get a concussion from heading a soccer ball than any other sport.
And guess what?
Accurate.
You get concussions from slipping in a shower, car accidents, falling off a trampoline. I mean, accidents outside of the arena of sports. Okay, this is a beautiful thing. I'll let Dr. Cummings.
Yeah.
I go into a brain bank with him to cut brains. He pulls the first brain out, and he's cutting something off. I'm like, well, what is that? And it's like looks like a leather, a thick layer of skin, right? And I'm like, what is that? He's like, that's the dura. I'm like, well, what does the dura do? Well, it wraps around the brain and it secures it down. I'm like, then you have plasticity to protect it again. There's all of these. And the brain itself is like hardened bread dough. It's not like Jell-O. It's not floating around in fluid, just floating all over the place. I'm like, well, I didn't know that. I thought it just floated around. He goes, listen, somebody was a lot smarter than all of us the way they protect the brain. So you got the dura, the plasticity, then the skull. Doesn't mean you can't have a concussion. And to add one more other thing, that doesn't mean we just ignore concussion. That is why I went to Congress in 2009.
Right.
Let's get protocols. Let's make it better. Let's address it. And if it happens, the treatments and therapies that parents should know about that should be exciting, because they can do something for the kids if they do have an accident. And keep in mind, it's not just in an athletic arena. It can be a car accident. It can slip and falling off a trampoline. You know, it could be on the recess or lunch at school in the backyard of a home.
But it's never a good thing to hit your head. I mean, let's just say
that.
We make that clear
in the book.
But,
you don't want to do that.
But we do all kinds of things to mitigate that in everything, whether it's softer playing surfaces on playgrounds, helmets for bikes, the improvement in equipment in football, all the things we do to try to limit that. But that's not to say that the brain is this fragile little thing sitting in. It's the most vital organ that we have, and it's pretty well protected. We're very resilient. And if you look at the idea of the mythology of subconcussive hit, it means that every time you hit your head, it's a pathologic problem. Like doing a facepalm. I'm now doing a subconcussive hit to myself, and now I'm going to...
We'd all be doomed.
Damage. And
we
it's just not true. We're not that fragile.
Well, you know, we have to let you go. Brainwashed, the bad science behind CTE and the plot to destroy football. Just before we leave, and I know I'm pushing things, but plot to me sounds sinister. Is it more just, are we just ill-informed? Are we actually trying to end
football? Sounds like conspiracy.
I'll make it quick, okay? Actually, this state has legislation to ban tackle football to age 14. California does as well. Okay, we already know, we've explained, I think everybody can agree to this. You can have a concussion in any athletic environment, okay? Even outside of an athletic environment. So why didn't you put boxing and MMA fighting on there? Why didn't you put soccer on there? Why are we just not going to let, why didn't you put recess and lunch during school? Why didn't you put the backyard of every home in America? Why didn't you put trampolines on there? If you had the scientific evidence, first of all, which there's none of this, that kids that play contact sports that are active from ages 7 to 11, there is no scientific evidence of this, that you're going to have issues later in life, why wouldn't we do that? If you had that to support, why wouldn't you want to protect kids in all environments? Why did you pick just football? And I'll tell you this, in the media, I've done a bunch of interviews, and I ask them, why you pick football? They go, because it's the big ticket. I'm like, wait a minute. So you're going to ignore all of the true, honest facts of this because right. it's the big ticket? I mean, that is a grotesque abuse of the your journalistic responsibilities, quite honestly. And that's actually where I really got it. Because they just kept targeting one sport it happens everywhere.
It blew my mind when we were working with some of the people in California on their legislation and some of the coaches out there that, you know, you as an eight-year-old kid, you could box and MMA fight, which are sports designed to target the head, but you couldn't play tackle football. And then if you look at the other side, where are the girls? How come there is not a single girl, female athlete, woman athlete represented in the study?
That.
Now, if you look at girls soccer right now has a higher concussion rate than boys tackle football.
That's right.
Now, if you Google
from heading
high school girls suicide, soccer, high school soccer suicide, you will find a plethora of stories of high school girl soccer players and cheerleaders who are committing suicide. Where are their brains? Why is it when a high school football player commits suicide?
I'd want to see more football. Data on that, though. I think that's interesting.
Guys, but, we have to let it go there. Again, the book's fascinating.
Now, let's just go Bears now.
Brainwashed fan science.
Got to throw that in there.
That's it. There's Merrill, the old bear, saying go Bears.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.